Earth and Sky.
This is Earth Sky's Clear Voices for Science podcast. Mindy Selman is a water quality expert at the World Resources Institute in Washington, D.C. She studies what scientists call eutrophication, the pollution of coastal areas from excess nutrients. Eutrophication can lead to the collapse of fisheries and toxic dead zones by tipping the ecosystem out of balance. How is this having an effect worldwide?
Well, we like to say it's a global problem, but with local manifestations. We identified 415 coastal ecosystems worldwide that were experiencing eutrophication, and only 13 of these can be characterized as being in recovery. It's a problem that's getting worse, and it's going to get worse before it gets better.
And why is that?
It's a problem that's very cross-cutting. It's multi-sector. It means it has to do with the type of energy that we're using. It has to do with the way we grow our food, what our diets are, and where we live and how we develop. There's going to be no simple fixes to eutrophication. It's going to require comprehensive policy changes that touch on agriculture, energy, urbanization, development, transportation. All of these things need to be addressed.
So would you call this a sustainability issue?
It is a sustainability issue, and it's linked to a lot of the same issues that are driving eutrophication, like fossil fuels. It's the same kind of thing that's driving global climate change. These are all linked, and they're all driven by human population and consumption patterns.
So how does this tie into the way that we eat in our diet?
The rise in nutrients has generally been linked to the increased use in fertilizers, as well as the way we grow our food, meaning we grow it more intensively. And also in terms of livestock, we are growing livestock in a more intensive way. So fertilizers and manure are two of the prime sources of the nutrients, nitrogen and phosphorus. So things like corn are actually very inefficient users of nitrogen. So this specifically, crops like this lose a lot of nitrogen to the environment. And when we're talking about livestock growing meat, when you look at the life cycle of growing meat from growing the feedstock, like the corn to feed the cattle, about 70% of the nutrients used to grow a head of cattle is lost to the environment.
So what kind of solutions can you point to in the agricultural industry?
There are several best management practices that can be employed on the farm to help reduce nutrients. It can be riparian buffer strips, so planting trees along streams to kind of catch and filter nutrients as they come through. No-till agriculture, what we call nutrient management on farms, which is, basically tailoring the amount of fertilizer that you apply to the crop that you're growing so that you're not over-applying nutrients.
Can this work for the sorts of large industrial farms that we're getting most of our livestock from and most of our corn from?
Part of the problem with a lot of these industrial farms, well, especially when we're talking about animal operations, is that there's not a lot of land to spread that manure on. That's part of the problem of the industrial agriculture, is what do we do with the manure? A lot of times this needs to be exported or alternate uses found for it.
So what would it take for an area such as the Gulf Coast dead zone to be in recovery?
Yes, the Gulf Coast, that's hard because it's actually, the watershed encompasses 31 states, including the Corn Belt states and the Great Lakes states, where we're looking at a lot of agriculture. And this is the breadbasket of our nation and in many respects the world. I don't think we can expect, obviously, a decrease in agriculture here. We just need to look at ways that we can reduce nutrient losses from farms, from agriculture in the area. We need to look at putting in more what we call nutrient sinks. This might be things like wetlands, which have been disappearing. Wetlands help cycle the nutrients and take them out of the system.
So do you have any statistics about how long it would take to get a eutrophic area into recovery or bring those nutrient levels back into balance?
I don't, but I can tell you that the Chesapeake Bay restoration effort has been going on for over 20 years at this point, I believe, and they're still no closer to their goal than they were when they started. And it is actually held up as a model worldwide for for addressing eutrophication because it's been very thorough at looking at the different sectors that are contributing to nutrient pollution and trying to put into place the types of policies that would help reduce that pollution. Yet, they've been unable to make any real progress, and the state of the Chesapeake Bay is actually getting worse.
This is a kind of effort that's very different from... I've seen a lot of river pollution cleanup efforts on the East Coast, like the Hudson River and the Charles River. So these are kind of, this is on a very much slower time scale than those.
Previous efforts under the Clean Water Act have mostly dealt with toxics, which, you know, the Clean Water Act has been very effective at reducing that kind of pollution. But nutrients are part of our day-to-day life, and to reduce nutrients to our ecosystem is going to be very difficult because it requires such significant changes in the way we live our lives.
Thanks to Mindy Selman for joining us. I'm Lindsay Patterson for EarthSky's Clear Voices for Science podcast.
We're at earthsky.org.